Hello, everyone. I'm Nate Truax, and you're listening to the CrocCast Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the CrocCast Podcast. I'm your host, Nate. And today I'm joined by Mark Perpetua, owner of Reptile Encounters. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, Mark, you want to give us a little bit of what you do, especially when it comes to crocodilians?
Absolutely. Reptile Encounters is something I started over 35 years ago. It was a general reptile program, but always included an alligator. And along the way, I've come across more alligators. At one time, I had as many as seven. And the crocodilians have just always been probably my favorite. I think a lot of it had to do with it wasn't your common thing in New York State. So I just always wanted to have something a little different, maybe, but I really became in awe of them. And to this day, I now have five alligators and two more or less crocodiles in the collection, along with all the other general reptiles. So it's still a general reptile show.
Okay. And how did Reptile Encounters start?
Like anybody, I had an interest as a kid. I saw my first show on my 16th birthday. And when I saw that show, I said, wow, that's kind of cool. I'd love to be able to do that. I still remember who it was. It was Michael Schwedick. He's out of Maryland. And he came up to a community college to do a program here in upstate New York. And he had an alligator. I think he even had an American crocodile. And again, that might have just been part of what led me towards wanting to be more into crocodilians as well.
Okay. And you go over what Reptile Encounters does?
So it's educational programming. I'm old enough that I go pre-internet, pre-Animal Planet. So I did my first program or lecture in 1991, and it was for a fourth grade class that my younger sister was in. Schools were different then too. I don't know how they are where you are, but here in New York, everything is strict. And who's allowed in the 1991? They allowed a 19-year-old into a fourth grade classroom with a boa constrictor, an iguana, a wild-caught snapping turtle, and my first alligator. But since then, it was school groups, scout groups, summer camps, and thanks to everything else that's gone with reptiles in the last 10 years, they've become entertainment more than novelty educational items, and now I'm doing resorts and campgrounds.
Okay, and you mentioned you have some alligators and some more crocodiles in your current collection. What are some of the other, as you say, general reptiles you have?
Well, when I say general reptiles, I mean I try to cover everything. So lizards, turtles, and snakes. At one time, I had a very big venomous collection. I was into venom as well, hot stuff, diamondback, both Western and Eastern, and local timber rattlers, copperheads. And I had a Gaboon viper for quite a while. But laws changed in New York State as far as the requirements to meet the permit. And while I was permitted for a long, long time, I just decided that some of the new requirements were going to be very costly and almost impossible to meet in New York State unless you were a big zoo. So no more venomous, but I still have a couple of Burmese pythons, boas, and carpet python. I have plenty of colubrids, corn snakes, rat snakes, king snakes, iguanas, green iguanas, rock iguana, some tegus. Used to have a lot of monitors, kind of scaled back a little bit. And then snapping turtles, pond sliders, tortoises, sulcatas. So yeah, it's still a little bit of everything here.
Okay. And can you give us a bit of an outline on what you do when you do give a presentation and what topics do you focus on during your presentation? What type of message you try and get across to people?
The message always was in the early days, the misunderstanding that causes fear. Like I said, now it's changed a lot. So I speak more to ecology and conservation these days. I speak a little bit of biology, the interesting facts that not everything that's alive, especially in the animal kingdom, is going to survive the same way humans do. And that's probably just something I picked up from my own parents growing up. My father, while he supported all my interest and let me have a large collection of lizards when I was a kid, he still treated everything like it was a human. It wanted to be played with like a cat. It wanted, like a regular mammal house pet. So I try to just get into the uniqueness of what it means to be cold-blooded, being a reptile, the cool facts about, alligators' palatal valve and ISOs for sensing their environment, alligator snapper wiggling its tongue and holding its breath for an hour. Some of the cool facts along with a conservation message.
Okay. And what would you say is kind of your normal, roster for doing a presentation? It's like one crocodilian, plus a few snakes and lizards, or?
It changes all the time because I like to add a little variety to myself. Been doing it long enough and hopefully have enough knowledge that I can ad lib almost any show now. So you could pick my roster for me and I'll go out and do a show. Not to sound too full of myself, but I mean, 35 years of experience with a wide variety of reptiles. So, but my usual roster would be something like a rat snake, corn snake, king snake. Then I've been using the tegus and iguanas as my lizard samples. Turtles, usually an alligator snapper or a common snapper along with a Florida soft shell. And then I've been using both an alligator and a crocodile because, again, being my favorite, sticking to that conservation message and being able to show the difference, because not too many people have been traveling with crocodiles in New York State as part of their shows.
Okay. Out of curiosity, how big are your alligators and crocodiles?
My biggest gator today is, I'm going to say about 50 to 51 inches, just over 4 feet. I have two of them that are about that big. One that's just under 4 feet, one that's about 3.5 feet, and one that is just under 30 inches. So those are the gators. And then the crocs, one is a little more or less around 30 inches, and the other one's a 4-footer.
Okay. And I'm guessing these are all still juveniles?
Yeah, we consider them all juveniles. The alligators are very territorial, though, even at 4 feet long. I've had two of them get into a little scrap one time when I tried to keep them together outdoors, and that didn't work out very well. And right now I have a divider in my outdoor cage, and I've been noticing that the two biggest ones that are outside, especially at nighttime, I was outside last night checking things, and they're facing each other, facing the divider. It's almost like they're trying to get to each other. I think one is a female. I sexed it very, very quickly when I got it. Only had that one for less than a year. But I don't know if it's territory or wanting to get to each other for mating purposes. So next Monday, I think I'm going to do a better job on sexing the second one and taping their mouths up and see what happens when I put them together.
Okay. That leads into my next question. You mentioned getting outdoors. I'm guessing I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that's a summer-only arrangement.
In New York, of course, would have to be. I could probably keep the alligators out till November. And just got to play it by ear, year by year, until the temperatures get down. And I baby them a little bit, I guess. I would say 50s at night. A lot of people might consider that cold, but for an alligator, it's not. And then they'll come indoors when we get consistently low, low temperatures. I mean, I've had alligator snappers outside in the wintertime until the top freezes over, and I've had to break off the ice to pull them out. And they survive fine. I mean, these are animals that do experience ice overs in the wild. The crocs are new to me. I have to admit that. So this will be my first full summer with both crocodiles. And my plans are to only put them out when I'm around in temporary outdoor enclosures and then inside for both security and temperature.
Okay. Sam, plus my question is, what has been your experience with keeping crocodilians in colder northern climates?
Well, again, since it was alligators, alligators just fit it more perfectly because I could drop their heat in the wintertime, let them get down. My gators, when they're indoors in the wintertime, were getting down to the 60s, low 60s. So they would go off food that would slow their growth rate. By normal standards, I will admit that probably leads to some stunting. But when you think of a Carolina winter and summer compared to my animals being indoors, and then I would always heat them up around April to get them start eating again. So keeping an alligator in a cooler climate is a little bit easier than a crocodile. But eventually, yeah, the big problem is always going to be they're still going to grow. They're going to get bigger than a tegu. They're going to get bigger than an iguana. And they're going to require a lot more room. It just might take a little bit longer to get there, which is why I held off on getting crocodiles for a little while.
Okay. In our previous messages, talking to each other, you mentioned you made artwork, and I can see someone in the background, but you made artwork that you donated to CrocFest. You
want Yes.
to talk about your artwork a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. Art has always been a part of my life as far as drawing. I'm not formally trained in art. I just always enjoyed sketching. And if you didn't have a pet alligator, I was able to draw it. If I didn't have a Komodo dragon, I could draw it. And if I didn't catch a 10-pound bass when I went fishing, I could draw it. So I drew a lot of wildlife, mostly the things I was into, fishing and reptiles. Yeah, I guess when I was in junior high school, a lot of monster trucks too. But eventually I got away from the art. I just didn't have the time for it. And I really didn't think anything of it. Just, okay, yeah, I could sketch something really quick and it would look pretty good. And then all of a sudden I just wanted to get back into it. And mostly for even making my own logos, anything that I ever tried to do merchandise or t-shirt wise, I tried to do myself. And a friend of mine was the one who encouraged me into putting the artwork out there a little bit more seriously. But before CrocFest, I had this crazy idea here in New York after 35 years of experience with alligators and learning about other crocodilians had came in as well in the past. I forgot to mention them. But I decided I was going to try something different, you know, further enough in my career that I had enough time that I could do special events directed towards conservation. So the idea was a few expos, we'll say, with a t-shirt design, some stickers, and a live alligator to get the attention over to my table. And then I wanted to donate that money to conservation. But of course, in New York State, people go to an expo, they want something for their bearded dragon. They're not thinking about croc conservation. They thought the alligator was cool at the table, but I wasn't selling a ton of merchandise. So eventually I had to start figuring out where am I going to donate this money if I make any. And that's how I first came across CrocFest. So I didn't become aware of CrocFest until I think 3 years ago. And they were doing an event for the Indian Gharial at St. Augustine Alligator Farm.
And I went to that one.
Did you go to that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've only been to one so far, but so that one I didn't go to. And I'm pretty sure it was right after the Black Cayman. And when I found it, they did one for Black Cayman. I forget where that one was. I think Wild Florida, maybe. Either way.
Somewhere in Miami, right?
I also came across Adeline Robinson's artwork. And she did the t-shirt design, and you know, it was all this really cool artwork that people were donating. So I said, I don't know, I did an ink drawing of the Indian Gharial head, more of a study, fairly accurate. And they said they loved it, and it got almost $300. I'm like, what? I used to draw it in study hall in high school instead of studying because it was something to pass the time and make me think about alligators and crocodiles and rattlesnakes. But So I was really shocked that it did that well and that was that well received. And then I had a digital art pad, so I started doing them in color with digital. And from there, it just kind of took off. I started really enjoying it more, knowing that other people were appreciating it. And so, yeah, I've donated to the last 5 CrocFest now. And last summer in Zoo Tampa, I did the T-shirt, and that was a dual species for both crocs of Cuba, with the Cuban crocodile and the American crocodile. So I did one of their T-shirt designs too so far.
That's pretty neat. Best I've been to one CrocFest. Which one was that?
The one where I did the T-shirt for. My problem is, in addition to my reptile business, I'm a high school science teacher.
So you're busy. You're busy.
So the problem is the southern schools end in May here in New York. We still got one more day. I got to go back to work tomorrow. We're doing this on Thursday. What is it? 26th, 25th? I should know the date. It's the 26th. So I got to go back Friday the 27th. June 27th is our last day in New York. So the timing of this year's CrocFest would have been, if I went, I would have spent all that money on a flight for 1 or 2 days and then get back for work. Where if I'm going to spend that much money on a flight, I'd like to make it a little mini vacation. So last year they had it on the 29th. So we finished school. I got on a plane with my wife the next day, went to CrocFest, had a great time there. And then we ended up, she's got a friend who had a place in the Keys. So we drove all the way from Tampa to the Keys and the Everglades, got to see more alligators in the wild there and had a great time.
Yeah. I didn't know New York school year was lasted so long, but ended so much later. Here in Ohio, ours ended, about a month ago, like late May, early June, depending on the district.
Yeah, well, we've always been a late June, even when I was a kid. I don't know. I'm going to say it's winter, but if you're in Ohio, that's got winter too. So I don't know why it keeps us here. But when do you start?
Start usually, see here. Mid-August?
Yeah, we don't start until after Labor Day.
Okay.
But we don't start till the beginning of September.
Yeah.
So right there, we lose a couple of weeks, and then all the vacation time, and we got to put in the snow days. But
yeah, snow days are always a fun addition to the school year.
Yep.
So, so what's been your experience trying to balance running this business on top of also having a full time job as a teacher?
I think it's got to be a passion. You know, just like anybody who just has a large collection, whether they do lecturing or not, you're cleaning cages and feeding at this hour of the night. Here we are at 8:30 at night talking about reptiles because we like doing that on top of jobs. The only difference is there are some nights and many weekends where I leave the family to go play with reptiles. When my kids were little, I missed, you know, little league games and things like that, unfortunately. But it was part of work, I guess. I had a supportive family. My kids are happy that I did what I did, that I do what I do. And I'm actually kind of proud of the connections I've made and how long I've been doing it.
Okay. And do you have any future plans for Reptile Encounters?
Reptile Encounters, it's hard to say. I could always keep that name just because it's already there. The website's already there. So like I said, the artwork and stickers and things, it eventually, I wanted to do my own croc conservation even before I found CrocFest. And I would like to continue in that direction, but I'm not sure where it will be. So as a passion, I wanted to leave New York and do something full-time with reptiles a long time ago. But whatever happened, I fell back on my college degree and decided to take a teaching job, which was great because in New York, teachers get paid well, at least in my area. So I can't complain about that. It's going to have a good retirement. So I look at retirement as a change in careers, and I have one more year left as a New York State teacher. So I'll only be 57 when I retire. I know people who work a lot longer in the life, so I'm not looking at retirement to sit on the beach and fish every day. I'm looking at it as a chance to change my career, probably move out of New York State, most likely Florida, and then see who needs help or what I can do down there. But that probably would mean getting rid of my collection. I don't plan on bringing it with me and restarting in a new area, especially like Florida, because there's just so many businesses to compete with.
Yeah. And you had to go through a whole new set of regulations and all of a sudden your licenses and all that.
And yeah, the property requirement's very different. They've never asked in New York what your property's like. If you can show them you meet the caging requirements and you know what you're doing, you can get the permit. So that's never been a problem for me. It's just in Florida, from what I read, it's also a certain amount of acreage, all fenced in. But that makes sense. You know, if an alligator gets loose in New York, we got to worry about 2 months before it gets too cold. And then eventually it's going to die because our winters are too harsh.
Unless it's in a sewer.
Yeah, in the sewer. But so, yeah, I think the requirements in Florida, and it would be nice if I could work with somebody else or with a zoo or some other collection, get my reptile fix. It would be nice to have one full-time job and then come home and relax and not have to feed at 8:30. If it could be more time for drawing, well, who knows? Building up a YouTube channel. I don't know. I'm trying to do that too now. So,
yeah. What mentioned outside of talking to just have a passion for reptiles in general. So in your free time, do you do any like field herping at all? Anything like that?
Very little. Because my free time, I try to give back to my family. But if we're somewhere where herps are visible, I'll go off the beaten path. So I try to. So the lucky thing about teaching is at least I get some time to myself. And a while back, a friend of mine and I were trying to do a YouTube channel together, and we went out. Map turtles are not easily found in our area, but I found two creeks that are tributaries to our Hudson River. And I was like, wow, there's a good population of map turtles. So, you know, we went out in one of my John boats and he filmed, and I actually jumped in the water with a snorkel and we tried to make it look Steve Irwin-ish and had a good time, you know, and we had plans of doing more. Another type of herping that I get to do is in the early spring in April. I'll notice that it's a good time to start fishing for our largemouth bass as they're waking up from their winter and get pre-spawn. But that's also when the snapping turtles are waking up. And before the lily pads are thick, if you see a rock sitting in this area where you know there's no rocks, you know that's the back of a shell cresting the water. And so I can go out and find 20, 25, 30 pound plus common snappers on a given morning in this area where I like to go fishing. That's probably my biggest herping. You know, going out and finding snakes is normally just by chance. And then where I live, we're at the very northern limits of five-line skinks. So I mean, I've never seen a skink in the wild in New York.
Okay. Well, if you end up moving to Florida, that might change.
Yeah, I've already seen plenty of them just visiting even places like Disney World.
Yes. Here in Ohio, five-line skinks can be kind of patchy. There aren't many around where my area is. But I always remember like going down to like vacation like Kentucky or Tennessee and just seeing them everywhere. I was like, I would just see reptiles all the time around me. It's change of pace.
Yeah. And
from the occasional garter snake to the garter. So.
Yeah, we get garter snakes, black rat snakes, eastern milk snakes. Occasionally copperheads, although I've yet to run into one of myself in the wild. I've had many brought to me over the years, but I've yet to run into one in the wild. I either get there too late when somebody calls me, or it's a misidentification and it's not a copperhead when I get there.
Yeah. One of my high school bio teacher said it's really funny. Well, it's kind of a sad story, but it's kind of funny as well. And Eastern Hognose is, you know, very few and far between. Well, one day, one of the students' dad brought a snake in a jar of alcohol, saying they killed a copperhead. And they had it in the jar of alcohol, and it was Eastern Hognose.
Oh, wow.
So they had put tape on it and labeled it the most dangerous snake in Ohio, which is wrong on two marks. One, it's not a copperhead, and two, most dangerous snake in Ohio is obviously a timber rattlesnake. But but yeah, it apparently had to give him a little talking to. He was like, no, that was hognose snake, only second wild hognose snake he's ever seen in this entire 60 plus years life in the area. So.
They're in our Hudson Valley too, and I know some friends that have seen them, but I've never encountered a wild hognose either. But my story is kind of the same. Young and dumb, and science in the real early days was kill something you found so you can study it in the lab later. So we were fishing in a local creek, and it's loaded with water snakes. But I think I was only 12 at the time. And my grandfather used to warn me of the copperhead. So it's a northern water snake. In the water, they get their reddish color. Everybody thinks they're copperheads. So what did I know at 12? I found a snake when I was fishing right away. It must be one of those copperheads. So we killed it. But my budding interest in biology, we carried it home in the fishing net. And when we got it home, I decided there was a lump in it. I wanted to dissect it. So the guys I was fishing with, my friends, were all 12 years old. We were having a little camp out backyard, had the tent, and we decided to go in the garage and cut open the belly of this snake. And lo and behold, it had not eaten. It had 21 fully developed babies in it. And I think back that if we had dissected it right away, there wasn't a bit of yolk or anything still attached to these babies. They were ready to be born, and they would have been squirming, and we would have thought we had baby copperheads on our head. So by the time we found them, they were dead. And I did the alcohol thing. Isopropyl alcohol was all I had available in the bathroom cabinet, but I preserved them, and they last years. And it was a science teacher at school that said, when I finally made it to junior high, that said they were baby rat snakes because they were gray. And I'm like, no, I know this is a copperhead. I didn't even think about the egg layer versus the non-egg layer and how I found them. And then that's when I got out the original. Well, I shouldn't admit this. I still have it. This just happens to be behind me. Roger Connett's field guide. And the reason I say I still have it, I shouldn't. I kept this from the junior high library all those years ago from the 1980s, and I still have it. So, but yeah, finding out they were baby water snakes, but the research that I had to put into that was like, holy crap, I love doing this stuff. So in proving him wrong, I proved myself wrong. We were both wrong. Turned out to be northern water snakes. And I got a book out of the library. Don't tell them.
Oh, man, you're late, Doofies. Must be tens of dollars.
It might have held the report card, but who knows by now? It's been too long.
All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
Oh, I could talk all night.
Okay. What are some croc things? Forget. You mentioned you had caimans in the past. What species of caimans did you work with?
I only had spectacle. It was before the dwarf caiman craze. We're going back to the late 1980s. And before I even had an alligator, I was in college and I was in a chemistry lab. And, you know, my family jokes today that can I go a day without saying the word alligator? And I must have been doing it back then as well. So that this guy that I hadn't met yet comes up to me in chemistry lab and goes, "You like reptiles?" I went, "Yeah, I do." And he goes, "Do you want a caiman?" So they were illegal even back then in New York State. And
this was still after the came as a dime store era.
Yeah, but this was his aunt and uncle owned a local pet shop, and they got it for him. So wherever they were legal, they were able to get one, but it was illegal in New York. But long story short, it came to me, and that was my first Cayman. I had that one for about 3 years until it got loose. I was young, didn't have any money. I made a makeshift cage outside, and it got out. And the funny thing is, even with all the woods, I live in a rural area, so there's plenty of woods. It turned up almost a month later in the parking lot of a local garage, and a tow truck found it. So it made all kinds of news, but I couldn't say anything because I didn't want to get in trouble. But that actually is what led me to getting my first alligator. Once that happened, I was old enough in college. Now I'm 19, and I got the permit and got an alligator from the people who ended up taking in the rescued Cayman.
That's a interesting circle.
It was, but it's really, holy crap, that story can lead to another story, lead to another story. So losing the Cayman, when I found out where it went, we had a local reptile, not local.
I was going to say, it wasn't kind of funny if you went to pick up the alligators from them, and that Cayman just recognized and started coming up to you out of nowhere.
Well, unfortunately, the Cayman didn't make it. The story is that whoever caught it probably pinned it with their foot. They think it had a broken rib, might have lacerated the liver. That's what I was told. New York State gave me the permit to get an alligator, and the place where this Cayman ended up was a little roadside zoo called the Catskill Reptile Institute. And when I called them about my Cayman, they said they did have a little alligator that they were willing to sell. So I got the permit, went to pick up the alligator, and when I picked up the alligator, I found out the reason they were selling it is they were closing. The building was purchased, but they only owned the business. So the building was being sold to another reptile guy. And if you're in Ohio, you might have heard of Clyde Peeling's Reptiland in Pennsylvania.
Name rings a bell.
All right, so he's in central PA. And back then, without the internet, it was still a name I had heard of. And he's got a beautiful zoo. It's fully accredited by the AZA. And as soon as I found out Clyde was taking over, I was making weekly trips the next summer past the location until I saw the date it was opening. So I was there on opening day, met Clyde, and then got a job. So I was lucky enough to work for an accredited zoo while still in college. And eventually that's where I got experience with venomous snakes. And he had Siamese crocodiles at the time. So we had a Siamese croc on display up here in Catskill. And really, really cool experience. I think I did that for 5 years before I started teaching. Because unfortunately, it was only seasonal here in New York. He has main place down in Pennsylvania year-round.
Okay. So, in total, how many different species of crocodilians have you worked with?
Worked with on long-term care, spectacle, the American alligator, Morillette's crocodile, at least a summer or two with the Siamese crocodile. That was at least a big one. That thing was almost 9 feet long. That was a full-grown adult. Those would be the animals that I've had any type of daily care with for a prolonged amount of time. But a friend had a Nile crocodile, so I was lucky enough to handle that. And I was working an event with another reptile. Why they had two reptile guys, I don't know. And he had a baby Salty, so I could say I held the saltwater crocodile, even though it was a quick hold to hand it back to him. But yeah. One, two, three, yeah, just four species.
Okay. So, in terms of Salties, I think I had you beat there. Once transported a Salty from Chicago to Houston. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Sometimes I was kind of nervous, like, please don't let the State Highway Patrol pull me over and ask us in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Illinois State Highway Patrol is probably have a few questions of why I have 6-foot crocodile in the trunk. But
in all technicalities, you've got to get a permission for every state just for driving through it.
But yeah, everything's perfectly legal, so you don't have anything to worry about. So,
but
they pulled up a rider, so that helps.
I picked up a crocodile, an alligator. I'm sorry, I picked up an alligator from Clyde's several years ago, and on our way back into New York, I hadn't had it on my permit yet. And back then, fireworks were illegal in New York. Everybody used to go over to the Pennsylvania border to buy them for the 4th of July. So we stopped to pick up. It's just nothing giant like a fair or a Disney World display. It was just, you know, your basic small Roman candle style fireworks. And my son's on the way home is like, Dad, what are we going to get in more trouble for, the alligator or the fireworks? I said, the fireworks. My permit says I have 3 alligators. I only got 1 in the truck. They don't know which one it is. And in Pennsylvania, it was legal, so I wouldn't need a permit to transport it through Pennsylvania. Yeah. Jimmy Riffle from the Gator Boys, who does a lot of traveling throughout the state throughout the country, once told me that it was almost impossible to get permission in Tennessee. He had to plan anything in that area to go around the entire state. And he couldn't be sneaky because he's traveling with a big trailer that says Gator Boys Roadshow.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what he's dragging.
Yeah. Yeah. I have heard that Tennessee can be kind of difficult with in terms of crocodilian legislation. So,
well, I almost moved there, believe it or not. When I first started teaching, something came up where we considered moving to Tennessee. And I contacted them, and they said I had the credentials to get an alligator as long as I met the property and housing requirements. So here in New York, when I had my first alligators, they were in the basement of my house. It was big enough. They were big enough enclosures, and everything was fine. But in Tennessee, I couldn't do that. And then a detached garage would have been sufficient, but you had to take off the overhead door and wall it in. And then you had to have firearms. You couldn't, you know, couldn't have a record where you couldn't get a firearm. So in case you couldn't re-catch your loose gator, you would shoot it. Just everything went on. And then the guy said, but you can have a caiman. And I laughed and I said, do you know anything about crocodilians? I said, my gator will sit in my lap. My caiman want to rip my face off. He goes, yes, but people have been killed by alligators, not by caiman. So I said, I can bring my alligator if I do all these other things and pay a $500 permit fee a year, but I could keep my caiman in my bathtub. He goes, yep, I don't make the laws. I'm just explaining them to you.
Yeah.
We never ended up moving there, but yeah, so it didn't sound like it would be too hard if you had an outbuilding or a shed with a secure door. He said I would have been the only guy in outside the 2 major zoos in Tennessee with an alligator if I did it.
You know, with planet warming and all that stuff, who knows? It could just be random alligators in Tennessee regardless.
Yeah. Well, one just showed up in Virginia, and I wasn't sure if it was the occasional one that makes it from the North Carolina border. My wife told me about it, but somebody in New York had one illegally and didn't want to get caught, so they were transporting it to North Carolina. I don't know if they were going to let it go or if they had a facility taking it in, but either way, they stopped overnight to sleep, and the thing got out of the truck and was walking outside the hotel.
Oh, that's... For anyone outside of Florida, that must be a interesting evening.
Yeah, this literally was just within the last 2 weeks.
But for an average Floridian, that's just a Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah, well, that's normal because, right, that's no different than I'll go out back and see a garter snake crawl across the yard.
Yeah.
But yeah, life in Florida is a little different. It's kind of more like Jurassic Park nowadays between all the invasives and the alligators. And if you're in southern Florida, hopefully the crocodiles.
Yeah.
There are friends that live in, technically they live in Miami and they have a house in the Keys. They see American crocs quite frequently. And because they live in Miami, there's the famous one, the Black Point Marina, that's named Fred.
Yeah.
So they've seen him many, many times.
Yeah.
So that's what I really want to do next. I've seen plenty of wild alligators going down to Louisiana in a couple of weeks. near the Atchafalaya Basin, but I really want to get back down to South Florida and this time see wild crocodiles.
Also, the crocodilians, are there any other different species of reptiles you really want to work with?
I've already worked with a ton. I mean, not Komodo dragons, but I've had many water monitors. I worked with a variety of venomous. And when I was at Reptiland, we had mambas, spitting cobras, king cobras, crates, Russell's vipers. So I worked with some of the ones outside of taipans and brown snakes. I've worked with some of what's considered, if not the most toxic, some of the most dangerous as far as the ones that kill the most people a year. I've worked with, I guess, every constrictor you could have in captivity. Anything would be cool in the wild to see and interact with. But right now, I mean, I can go to any zoo, whether it be back to Reptiland to visit Clyde or to the Bronx Zoo in New York, and I'll stroll through and go, yeah, that diamondback's cool. I'm like, oh yeah, that python's big. But I get to the Temistema cage, I get to the Chinese alligators, and I'm not moving. I don't know what it is. And just an American alligator, I can just go to any zoo that has that. That's actually how I got one of the crocodiles. Not from the Bronx Zoo. But like I said, I haven't kept crocodiles because of their tropical nature. They're going to be faster growing. But because I'm close to retirement and I'm going to have to rehome a lot of things anyway, I thought, well, let me raise one for 2 years and then we'll see what happens when it comes time to finding a new location. But so I bought the baby Morillettes right after Crocfest. I was at Crocfest, they knew me as an artist. They knew I designed it. They knew I had alligators, but I just said to my wife, they're auctioning off two little baby Morillettes tonight. And Kurt said he'd ship them to me because they said, you got to have your FWC permits to leave with them. And I'm like, obviously I'm not Florida, so I'm not going to have Florida permits. He goes, oh yeah, I could ship them to you. So I was getting ready to bid, and I thought an auction, they'd be cheaper because I've seen them for sale at expos. My son used to live in Texas, and he would send me pictures more or less for $500.
Yeah,
these went for over $7 a piece, and they sold them as a pair. So it was like $1,400 and change. Mm-hmm. It was way outside my range for just knowing it was only going to be for a couple of years. But when we got home, one of the guys who was at Crocfest, he breeds them and got a really good deal shipped here. So I said, I got to get it. What am I going to do? So I had one crocodile and three alligators now. Right after that, a little alligator was released in a creek here in New York. So I got the phone call. And my wife's like, what are you going to do with that? I said, I don't know. It's publicity. It was found. They called me. Actually, that was a different gator. I'm sorry. So that one I went and picked up. And then right after I picked that one up, a zoo in Connecticut called me and said, we got a crocodile who's always moving because it thinks everybody that comes to see it is going to bring it food. So I don't think it was mentally stressed. It was just getting physically stressed as constantly going to the cage, to the glass and snapping and swimming back and forth. They had special signs on the cage. But he said maybe it's best that it goes to an educator where it's not seen all day long. And so then I told my wife, you'll never guess what happened. 2 days after getting an unexpected alligator, now we're getting an unexpected crocodile. And then right after that, this spring, somebody had one illegally in Long Island. So they tagged Chris Gillette and his fiance Gabby, and they knew I was up in New York. So they sent me the message saying, can you help? And I ended up taking in that alligator, which would only account for four. There was a fifth one in there somewhere that was found at a murder scene. It was an argument that led to a stabbing here in New York. It sounds like I live in the inner city. This is the Hudson Valley, the rural areas. They went to the apartment to investigate the stabbing, found a 4-foot alligator. That's the one that I think is a female. And so I have her as well. And then the person who got stabbed eventually died. So it became a murder scene. With a live alligator, I'm saying.
That kind of reminds me of when I was in college. The college had a servitarium that I was working at, and our big Asian water monitor was originally seized up in Chicago area from a drug lord or something like that there. And he was one of the animals seized from that drug lord's collection, eventually found his way down there. So I don't know why, but it wouldn't be unusual, but unheard of, to see a reptile in a sketchy, legally sketchy situation.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. I don't know. There's just something about reptiles in general. Maybe it's the same thing that makes somebody like them from the scientific angle that makes somebody who's willing to do something illegal, like drug dealing, bikers, whatever. And I don't want to put anybody in a clique or piss anybody off, but I had a vet tell me one time when I talked to him about taking care of reptiles, and he's like, usually I get people with ball pythons who don't want to spend a dollar on them. And I said, no, this is a different situation. And he became to know who I was and took care of my reptiles for a little while.
Yeah.
When they needed it.
I was going to say, I also heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard drug dealers, stuff like that, they'll have like those big scary animals just so they can stash like the money and stuff inside the enclosure because no one wants to search the inside an alligator's enclosure. So,
well, didn't Pablo Escobar have hippopotamuses brought?
Yeah.
Over to the, I forget where they are.
Colombia.
They're in Mexico or?
Colombia.
Colombia, but now there's a population that was released, and there's hippopotamus.
Yeah. Yeah. So, to be fair, I think in Escobar's case, I think he was just had too much money and was too bored, so he just starts shipping in stuff. Because he apparently shipped in all sorts of crazy animals in there, but
right. But you don't have to be a drug lord to do that. A long time ago, there was a guy by the name of Arthur Jones who had a compound in Florida with elephants and crocodiles, and he was the original purchaser of Gomec from Australia before it went over to the alligator farm.
Yeah. Was he like, so he was a Nautilus, exercise equipment and stuff like that?
Yeah, he was the inventor of Nautilus. He made his millions with weightlifting, but he always had a history of safaris and being the real Indiana Jones style kind of guy.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say Indiana Jones. That's a bad example because Indy was afraid of snakes.
Okay. I don't mean to cut you short, but I've had a long day at work, and I have another day at work tomorrow. So,
I bet you do. If you would allow me to, because you asked earlier if there's anything else. Like I said, I could talk all night, but just to plug my new YouTube channel. As an old guy, I was always afraid of technology, so when I had more stuff, including the Venomous, I always kind of shied away from learning the editing and camera, but things became much more user-friendly with new technology. So I finally did it. I mean, it's late in life as a 56-year-old, but I just started a YouTube channel called Croc Chat, and that's dedicated to croc education and any type of money I can raise through that, which it's going to take a while to get it monetized, but I at least did get a sponsor to buy a few commercial spots. And hopefully I can generate a little bit of money that way to give back towards conservation. And so yeah, if anybody wants to check out Croc Chat, that's a new YouTube channel. And I wrote a book on alligators and crocodiles. Okay. So if I can plug that one's on Amazon. It's not over the top. It's a book of, I would say, junior high school level. But as far as an adult who doesn't remember high school biology, it's still challenging enough to like a Nat Geo general interest in nature type book. But I put off ever writing it because, you know, what are you doing? You're repeating what you learn from other people's books. But I figured after the years of experience, having worked at Clyde's and some of the crazy stories that went with it, and then the ability to do some drawing. So I actually, one chapter did profiles of every species. It's got some of my other artwork in there, but then some of the contacts I've made, I've got some photography in there from a professional photographer in the Atchafalaya Basin and some photography in there from Joe Ozalewski and John Bruggen shared some photos with me. So it turned out to be a decent book. If anybody's interested in nature and art, it's got a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And how can people reach out to Reptile Encounters?
I am on social media. Facebook is Mark Perpetua's Reptile Encounters. Instagram. Oh my God. I don't even know what the heck the Instagram handle is. I don't use it enough. I do it through Business Suite so that I can do both Instagram and Facebook at the same time. But I'm going to look it up. If you're asking. Oh, it's Gator_perp, P-E-R-P. Gator_perp. It's also listed as Reptile Encounters. And like I said, Croc Chat on YouTube.
All right. And with that, thanks for having on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I enjoyed talking with you.
My pleasure.
All right.